Welcome to The Way Home with Laura Smith, the show that brings you wonderful guests, helpful advice, and uplifting stories. The Way Home, live inspired. Here's your host, Laura Smith.
Well, today is a power-packed show with very powerful women. Two very different time frames for these women. And I say that not because the author is ancient, but she writes about an ancient goddess of Egypt and who was the goddess of scribes and all of the different attributes that were given to this particular person, Sashat, and how fascinating she was. And to this day, you can see her in museum walls and on tablets, but almost 4,000 years of history about this particular woman who was the keeper of the writings and so much more of history as well. And then we have Dr. Judy Gao. She is a very fascinating person who emigrated to the United States from China, from communist China. Her father actually being a part of the Cultural Revolution there, and all that she has accomplished from coming to this country. And it's a riveting story. The name of the book is Dreams Across Continents, and what she has succeeded in becoming and doing while she's here is nothing short of a miracle when you think of where she came from and how. It's all coming up on The Way Home, a power-packed program full of truly inspirational women.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Oh, for many years, I have met the most incredible people, and especially in the New York area when I was there for 40 years. And over that, I just met so many interesting and really women who are so deeply connected to not only their own spirituality, but they are teachers and they are writers and they are people who embody all that they stand for and believe in. And one such person that I've met over the years is a reverend. Her name is Reverend Lori Sue Brockway, and she's not only a reverend, an interfaith minister, wedding officiant, but she's also the author of more than 25 books. She's written extensively on the world's spiritual traditions and with everything. And also, I'm finding that she's gotten a degree in public history, which she's going to explain to us. But on her many list of books, and one of the latest is one of her favorite topics. It's called Goddess Sashat. And we're going to hear all about this woman who, well, or the goddess who presides over the words, wisdom, and historical records of ancient Egypt, and maybe even today still. Lori Sue, thank you so much for being on The Way Home.
Thank you, my friend. It's so wonderful to see you, hear you, and spend some time with you again. We really do have a lot of history in New York back in the day. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
No, thank you. You have done so much writing, and thank goodness for social media, because when it's good, it's really good in that it keeps us up to date with what's going on in each other's lives. And I just see you are one of the most prolific writers and historians of beautiful spiritual modalities in the world of many faiths. That's why you're an interfaith minister. And you and your husband, both Victor Furman, he is wonderful as well. And I love your love story that has inspired many people in the world with your deep and abiding love for each other and all that you offer to the world in terms of what it's like to live a life of love like that as a couple. But on your own, you have just done so many writings. And this goddess Sashat, and I'm saying that correctly now, I've had to practice a few times. She was in ancient Egypt back how many thousands of years? Is it close to 4,000 years ago?
Well, the ancient Egyptian religion is about 5,000 years. The culture is about 5,000 years. I mean, we've got history going way, way, way back. She was actually one of the goddesses that was a special favorite of the pharaohs, because one of her roles was to write their history and to write their successes and their achievements, for and record those achievements for history's sake, and that's why we know about her and about their achievements, because she also wrote them into the Persea tree, or the tree of life. All the pharaohs wanted Shishat and her partner, friend, cohort Toth or Toth to write their names in the tree of life so that they would have a good afterlife and they would be remembered well. But if I discovered when I was researching this book that some of the other citizens wanted her to write their stories or their names or to be with them in the afterlife. And you will often see her image on a mummy mask or the mask of somebody who's been buried in a tomb, and there's one at the Met Museum. And Shishat is on there because they wanted her to help lead them into the afterlife.
So on the topic of gods and goddesses, here I am in the middle of the country where it's very much that's called the Bible Belt, actually. So there's a lot of reference and point of reference for a lot of people in mainstream Christianity and the Bible and such. But obviously there is ancient history that goes way before that. And there are references even in the Bible to gods and goddesses. Now, we're not supposed to worship many, but just the one. But obviously there's so much history, like the ancient Egyptian history. So when somebody talked about a goddess or a god, what are they really referring to? I know that's probably a very 101 question for you, so deeply steeped in this knowledge. But what a god and a goddess was something, was it a figment of their imagination that they would build stories around? Or was this maybe based on an historical figure, whether it's a female or male, that did something really great and then they're remembered for many thousands of years to come? What is a god and a goddess?
Thank you so much for asking that question. It's so interesting. I just finished an article, just published this week, called Goddess Spirituality 101 in Spirituality and Health magazine. It's available online. In that article and in a lot of the work I do, I trace the history of divinity through the ages. Now, of course, I'm an interfaith minister, so my training is to embrace God, goddess, all there is in all aspects. And if you just look at today's religious traditions, not just the ancient religions, but a lot of them are ancient, they have gods and goddesses. The Hindus have gods and goddesses. The Buddhists have gods and goddesses. The Native American indigenous cultures have sacred males and sacred feminine. The concept in the universe that's supposed to make our world go round and round, just that everything is male and female, it's not just one or the other. And of course, it could be also gender neutral to some people in how they experience it or express spirituality. But to consider or even worship a goddess does not mean that it negates anybody else's religious practice, because, you know, Judaism did have goddesses in the very beginning, in the day of Solomon. Not anymore, obviously. Christianity and Muslim Islam religions take a very singular focus on the divine, but everybody has their own God. They speak to God, speak to the divine in different languages. Something I was taught in the very beginning was by this magician named Doug Henning. I was asking him that same question, like, how do we have gods, goddesses? What's real? What's a real divine person? And he said, it's one big sort of ball of divine energy with many facets. And I said to him, you mean like a disco ball? And he said, okay. So now when people ask me about, you know, how do we figure out God, goddess, all there is, I say, imagine a disco ball. And there's one truth, there's one divinity, and it has many facets and many faces. It's known by many names. There are many people who honor the feminine divine traditions, who either grew up with those traditions, like in Hindu households or Buddhist households, or African religion households, or they adopt. So maybe you come into the world with your faith of origin and you never give that up for anything else, you know, but you might begin to look at different religious practices or spirituality in a way that's kind of interesting. I mean, if you're curious, you might want to know. So, you know, what were the goddesses like 5,000 years ago in Egypt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, interesting. I've been a student of Christian Science for over 40 years, and it was founded or discovered by a woman in New England in the Boston area back in the middle 1800s. And she always referred to God as father, mother. So one God, but two aspects, male and female. And that always felt comfortable to me. I always felt that's comfortable. Because I feel like the aspect to all human beings is that there's, you know, we have the divine female and male energy. And, you know, there's a way for us to be able to express that without making it two different gods, you know, to keep it one. So that was not something difficult for me to ascribe to. But for some people it is. And that's okay. But either way, these ancient goddesses and gods, so they were people that did not actually exist in reality, and then they were then revered afterwards for years to come, or they were the construct of some imagined or spiritual vision or something of people.
Well, a lot of what we understand today, what some of us understand today as mythology, was ancient religion. Now, the Greeks didn't actually have a religion per se. They had philosophies, but they had gods and goddesses. And the Romans adapted their gods and goddesses and changed their names. Romans were a little more religious and pious in a different way. It began way back in Mesopotamia with the goddess Inanna. And we know about her because a priestess and a princess and a real person who walked the earth named Enheduanna wrote something called The Exaltation of Inanna. And she was the first person to have a byline. And we really do not have any liturgy for goddess traditions per se, the way we have Catholic liturgy or Buddhist liturgy or the Vedas. But Inanna was one of the original hymnists to the goddess, Enheduanna, I'm sorry. And I learned about her from one of my teachers, Annabelle DeBoulle. And I was shocked that when I discovered the world's first writer was a female to begin with. Now it's pretty well known. And I just thought it was so fascinating that back then in Mesopotamia, everybody had to worship gods and goddesses in the ancient cultures, the seat of humanity, now Iraq. And they would bring their prayers and their blessings and the offerings to the gods and goddesses. And it was the priestesses and the priests who had to bring those to the gods and the goddesses who were in an inner sanctum and present it on behalf of the community. But religion was part of the culture and the civilization, and it was one of the ways that civilization was kicked off. Now, today, we have direct access. I mean, there's a lot of faiths that believe that you have to have a spiritual leader who is the go-between, and I 100% honor that, and I understand that, and I respect that. And there are also a lot of faiths where, for example, Hinduism, you might have a male priest in the temple who offers a worship to, say, the goddess Lakshmi and her partner Vishnu. But the moms and the dads and anybody can also do what they call home puja. So you can create your own worship service. In the current goddess traditions, it's very egalitarian. Anybody can do it kind of practice where you do not need an intermediary to communicate with the divine. And, you know, there's a very famous priestess named Phyllis Carrot who teaches people the ancient Wiccan religion. And there's somebody named Starhawk who teaches people. And then, you know, there's Glastonbury, where I trained, you know, where people learn about the interfaith approach to goddess spirituality.
It's fascinating to me. And I always wonder, Shashat, that you've written about in Goddess Shashat in this book here, she was the keeper of the writing. She was the scribe. She was also she was an accountant, and she was the consensus. But see, so, but was that like the highest form of that? Or was she somebody that you had to try to emulate?
She was not a human woman. She's not recorded as a human woman. She's a divine female in a pantheon of Egyptian gods and goddesses that anyone anywhere in the world can find anywhere. You don't have to go to Egypt. They are in every museum. They are in historical places. They are emulated in different ways. The ancient Egyptian religion was very spiritual, and we know about it because it was all written down. It was painted on walls. And, you know, a lot of it, what we know as temples today, were the individual tombs of royalty, and it was private. And now anybody can go, because that's actually Egypt's public history, which is, it is the history of their world that's actually part of public view. And, something that's very much a part of the public record.
Just amazing. And you have so much knowledge. You've done so much research, and yet you apply it in very everyday ways as an interfaith minister and an officiant, a wedding officiant. How many weddings have you actually performed at this point?
Well, I have to say I have lost count, but it's hundreds. It may be close to 1,000. I'm saying, I think at least 800. But I'm sorry, I lost track. I mean, there's weddings that I sign the licenses for. And then there's literally thousands of people that I've consulted with, families who've come to me with really, really, really tricky religious issues. Like, you know, someone of one faith wants to marry a female of another faith, and her parents will not allow it. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that happens around the world. And I also have had this opportunity to do a lot of blessings for people. So I've always served people around the world. We used to use Skype, or they've come here. They've traveled here for special blessings. So I've married a lot of people, a lot of soulmates, I think.
Oh, that's beautiful. I actually just started doing it 2 years ago. And so I've got two weddings under my belt. But I see it as a very sacred charge. And I enjoy just the getting to know the people and trying to bring out their love and whatever their language would be for that, and put it into a lovely spiritual context when possible. But you are just, honestly, I mean, you'll probably be in the World Book of Records for officiating the most weddings around the world. But I love your aspect of understanding history. It is just incredible that you do, and your entire library. I mean, so many books on this. And if people are fascinated and wanting to learn all about the different gods and goddesses and in terms of history, I love that that you are now doing that with public history, which I hadn't heard of as a degree before. But that's interesting to me. So it's the way in which we consume the history. Is that what it is? Or it's just one aspect of history?
It's an aspect of history, and honestly, it really is a very prevalent aspect of all history. Like, I'm a member of the American Historical Association, also the National Council on Public History, also the Alliance of Women, and, you know, it's just very, it's all connected. Public history, one of the big differences is it's not an academic tradition. I mean, we all have to go to school and write all those really, really, really hard papers and create exhibits and things like that. But it's not something that that trains you so much to be a history teacher, like a history degree would be. It more trains you to work in museums, to work with people of all disciplines, like archaeologists, sociologists, anthropologists. It's the overlap and the intersection of so many different traditions, ancient history, current history. I did my final project for school was ancient goddesses in New York. I did an exhibit because I was always like, I know there's a lot of goddesses here, but nobody ever really focuses on them. And so suddenly every place I went, there was a goddess somewhere in the museums, on buildings, on bridges, on the top of buildings. You know, there's a justice goddess on the top of City Hall. There's a victory goddess on the top of the municipal building. And even in Washington, there's a goddess, I should just whisper this, on top of the Capitol building. Mm-hmm. They call her the Statue of Freedom, but she has roots in the goddess Columbia, which was one of the original, before Liberty even.
Wow. Is that why they call it the District of Columbia?
Well, yes, that's what the research tells me. When I started my research with the ancient goddesses in New York, I was surprised. I actually did not realize that Liberty, Lady Liberty, used to be called a goddess. And in the early women's movement, when we were really fighting for the original vote, they talked about goddess Liberty. And, you know, we don't use the language anymore, but, If you look at some of the national treasures and the New York treasures and just look around your own communities and museums, you'll see goddesses. So where did they come from? They were in temples and they were in historical sites and they were in sacred sites. I'm not talking about Columbia. She's a newer goddess, or the Statue of Freedom was created for a specific purpose. But I'm talking about these ancient goddesses from different traditions. That's how we know that they were religious traditions, because somebody had these icons in holy places and they were taken out and put into museums. And now there's something, a big thing happening with repatriation of goddesses, where the people in Nepal and other areas are saying, and India, we want our goddesses back. They're sitting in a museum when we would worship them.
Interesting. Fascinating. So much history. And we're just scratching the surface here with a fascinating woman, Lori Sue Brockway, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway. And this latest book, Goddess Shashat, talks all about her. But again, 25 books and counting. There's so much you can dive into. What's a great website where everyone, besides Amazon, where people can find it? But Lori Sue Brockway, and Brockway is spelled, for people to know, is Brockway, Lori Sue Brockway. Where's a good website to find all of your works? People should just Google your name.
I have a website where all my books and my works are. It's called RevLoriSue.com, RevLauriSue.com.
RevLoriSue.com. Well, like I said, scratching the surface. We could have you back 1,000 times and still not get through it all. Lori Sue, you are so interesting and fascinating and a wealth of knowledge. Thank you for sharing it. You're a goddess in my book, someone who truly brings the beauty of the great sacred feminine to every aspect of life. Thank you so much for joining us on the way home today.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Bless you.
Bless you as well.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Well, once in a while, you come across some amazing book that is a true story, based on a true story, and you get to meet the author and learn about their life, and you try to imagine how people in this day and age, the things that they went through to get where they are. And Judy Gao is one of them. She has written a very beautiful book about her life, which is so fascinating. Dreams Across Continents, A Life of Challenges and Triumphs. And boy, oh boy, across the continents from China to America to Connecticut. What an incredible life story, and one that literally it could be a movie, I would say. But she is just an incredible person with so many passions and interests. She's a doctor. She's a neurologist. She has just done so many things over the years. But she came from a time in China when her father was a general for Mao. And it is just fascinating that you're here with us today. Judy, thank you.
Oh, thank you for this opportunity. And I'm honored to be talk with your audience.
For sure. You know, we're honored to talk to you, too, because this is a life story. Like I said, it sounds more like a movie than real life. And yet here you are. You look pretty ageless, but what a life you've led. And your book starts, of course, with your life being born in China into the family that you were. Let's tell the audience a little bit about your life, about growing up there and your father's role in the Cultural Revolution, basically.
Sure. I'd love to tell your audience, actually it's American, because most American are granted, they're born here. They don't know very much of the outside of the world. So China is a one Chairman Mao to establish the new China. So my father is a general of the military, so we do have a privilege. We have a privilege followed by the Russian styles. So we have our own store, our own swimming pool, you know, ice skating, everything is so good. However, when I was 13, Cultural Revolution started. The life became like hell. So everything's gone. No nanny, no special thing. And every young people, no school. Have to go to the countryside, factory, or military.
Mm.
So life is so hard.
Yeah, so you were brought up, you started out having this incredible education, and you knew early you wanted to be a doctor. You had four sisters, so there were five of you, which at that time in China, was it such a big deal to have so many children that were girls? Because I know that later that became a problem for the Chinese. Not only that, but how many children you could even have. What was it like for your father being connected with Mao that he had five daughters? Was it something that was difficult?
Oh, in that time, there's no birth control until my generation. They only allow one child. So my father always wanted to have a boy. So he keep getting girl. So five girls, in China, we call five golden flowers. So we're all good, have a very good education. Everything is perfect until Cultural Revolution. Everything is so hard. No school. I was crying. Mom, I want to go to school. My mom said the whole country has no school.
And so when you say no school, you weren't allowed to be educated, but you were indoctrinated. Is that correct?
No school means every school shut down. All schools
right. Closed.
Yeah.
But did you learn some type of propaganda from the government that you had to learn to become, you know, part of that Cultural Revolution, or you just never went to a school at all and you started? What did you do when you were 13 and you stopped going to school?
So we were told if you learn more, you become more stupid. So school was all shut down. I asked my mom, what I do? My mom said, go to get the book from your neighbor. They have a high school, college education. Get the book, then learn yourself. So I tried to do that, and I learned the first English was the flag. So I tried to, you know, teach myself, taught myself mathematics, physics. Chemistry is tough. Physics, I think, is more tough. And the mathematics, advanced mathematics is more tough. So then school was resumed in 1.5 years, but it's very chaos. It's class, it's chaos. We learn almost nothing. Nobody respects the teacher. So basically, I taught myself before I go to medical school.
So you taught yourself to understand things like physics and mathematics. I mean, even with a teacher, I flunked geometry. I can't imagine teaching yourself in books how to learn all those things. So then once you did, when you were 16, you were able to start working in the field or going to college. Tell us about that.
Right. I always wanted to become a doctor. When I was 10, my mother brought me to a bookstore, said, "This is a famous doctor, Li Shizhen. He's a herb doctor." So I said, "Okay, I want to be a doctor to service for the people, treat for people." So I chose to be go to the hospital to become a nurse and technician. So from there, they do have some education for pre-meds, you know, nursing school. But meanwhile, I still continue to learning physics, chemistry, which is a medical school need. When I was 23, I do have a chance. And because when I was 23, the Cultural Revolution stopped. So the college is open, medical school open. Oh, I'm desperate to go. So I did have a chance to make an effort, went to the medical school, and meanwhile, still, you know, learning myself. So then from there, I become doctor.
Wow. And what kind of doctor? What did you specialize in medicine?
Well, you know, China and here is a little bit different. So we have a similar curriculum as Western medicine, but we do have one curriculum we don't have in here in American is herb medicine and acupuncture. So, I got that curriculum. So that's why I come here. I become MD, also licensed acupuncturist. So when I graduated from medical school, which general practice like internal medicine, then I pursued my neuroscience master's degree in the academy to learn neuropsychopharmacology. Then I got a chance to come here for PhD in NYU with Dr. Friedhoff. So from there, I entered the neurology residence, become neurologist and acupuncturist.
Wow. First of all, I love acupuncture. I've had such good success with it. But the neurology, your mother had Parkinson's, correct? And so you wanted to see if you could yourself find a way to cure her situation.
You're right. I'm a neuroscientist. Then my mother has Parkinson's disease from age 48 to age 78. I just want to help my mom and all the people with neurological conditions. So I determined to go to a neurology residence rather than internal medicine or psychiatry, which I did. I trained at NYU and then become a faculty in there. I have my private practice in New York City. I had 4 clinics before pandemic.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. And how did you do that? So you come here and did you teach yourself English? Did you go to some Berlitz school? How did you learn English?
We are required as a graduate student, required to learning English. So I did have some teacher teach me for English. Then I come here, of course, environmental is all English. So that helped. And I did learn myself. Also, my professor, later on, I married to him. He's American, 5th generation of the German. So I did learn also from him and also from my patients, communication. So a lot of things, you know, going on. And of course, always learning by yourself.
Absolutely. Were you ever able to help your mom with her situation?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was treated in China with different medications. I able to manage her for a while, but eventually she had to give up because it's a later stage. I feel so bad. But now I have a new method to help the Parkinson's patient. I wrote a book actually for the Parkinson's patients, Parkinson's disease. So
that's incredible.
In some degree.
That's incredible. My guest is Judy Gao. She has a beautiful book based on her life, a true story called Dreams Across Continents, A Life of Challenges and Triumphs. And indeed, challenges and triumphs. Some of the things that you depict as you were younger in China that you went through and had to go through alone are just really, it's hard for us as Americans to really grasp that. I mean, and how different culturally things were then. Now, how long have you been in the United States now? And what has the journey been like for you? Has this really been sort of a dream come true for you? Are you living the life of your dreams? Were you able to assimilate into the American culture to the extent where you will always live here now?
Yeah, that's very good questions. When I came to U.S., I was 35. So now I'm here in February 26th, going to be my 36 years. When I arrived to New York, oh my God, that's a dream. I want to achieve my dream. So when I come here with $200 and have my, PhD tuition, and I mean, $800 per month. So I save $1, walk to the Chinatown from Midtown of Manhattan just in order to save $1 for subway.
That's rent, a long walk.
I know, 45 minutes. My rent is $150. My grocery is $50. So I save $600 for my daughter's daycare center. So in that time, I won't pick up any penny from the road. Because you have no money, so you leave this life. But I never give up. I want to pass my exam to become a doctor. You know, foreigner, you had to pass a certain exam, got the license. It's so tough. I couldn't pass the first time. I tried the second time. I did. Then after I got my medical license practice, I achieved gradually my dream. I purchased my house, become homeowner, and become so many clinics. I opened a couple business in real estate. So everything is a dream achieved.
Unbelievable. But you did it the good old fashioned way. And really, you lived the American dream. You have lived it. You're still living it. It looks like. How many children do you have now?
Oh, I only have one. I was so busy. You know, you have to balance yourself as a mother and also be a female doctor. So I couldn't get a chance to get a second one. But this one, my daughter is so successful. She's now is a medical director of the pediatric GI transplant in Stanford University Medical School.
Oh, my goodness. Out in California.
In California.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And yes. And so looking back now, can you honestly say that so coming to America was really the best way to achieve your dreams? Would you have been able to achieve the same things if you had stayed in China?
I think American has much, much more freedom to have much, much more opportunities and even have a lot of difficulty obstacles. But I determined I want to overcome all of the difficulties. And there's so many inspiration in the environment and so many encouragement. So I really think this is my dream place. This is my dream country. I will continue to my dream.
Yes. And people who have not had your experiences may not know that in such a way or appreciate it in the way that you have. It's like, you know, many people who come from countries that, you know, they come from difficult things or communists, you know, the Cubans that were able to leave and come to America, they have a different perspective than many of us, you know, who are here. I was able to travel my whole life as a child. My dad was in international business. And so I got to see how other people lived in other countries. And that was, I think, probably the most important thing as someone was to see how other cultures lived. And if you don't ever really have a chance to see that, you don't really know or understand what you have. And that was true for me. I grew up in Sao Paulo, Brazil, back in the 70s when, you know, there were a lot of poor people. There was a very big divide between the haves and the have nots. And, it was a third world country at the time. And we also traveled through Asia and different places. And it's just, I think it's just people in America, sometimes they don't, and I'm not saying this to look down on anyone. I'm just saying you don't always know what you have until you see what the rest of the world is like. And you really understand that, you know, the great opportunities that are available here, the beautiful country that we have. But you have totally embraced all of it and worked your way through when you're collecting pennies off of the sidewalk in New York City just to be able to eat. It's fascinating to me. It doesn't sound like you're slowing down at all. Do you have plans to write more books, open more clinics, businesses? What's next on the horizon for you, Judy Gao? I mean, what more could you possibly fit in?
Thank you for asking, but I also appreciated your sharing all of your story, your perspective to say, yes, I say immigration is very difficult in the beginning. Even now, you know, we have a language barrier. I have to learn the art of how do I talk with patient. Like patients say, call me. In China, we just say, what do you want? But here you had to say, what would you like? How can I help you? So it's so different, the language and also lifestyle. We cannot just bump people. In China, we're shoulder to shoulder, bump to each other. Here you had to be very polite. But anyway, as immigrant, I know the people respect me. Even I'm a female minority, but my patients from all of us, different race, different countries, they all respect me. So I feel like so encouraged. So now I would think about, I'm a neurologist. Also, physically I'm good and the appearance, I'm also look young. So why don't I want to be a senior or medical fitness model? So I would think about the design, the step by step to teach our, people above 50 years old, how do you preserve your neck, back, your shoulder, your knee, and how do you balance yourself, not fail? Then how do you treat your brain? Because I'm a really brain scientist. I developed the app. This app teach you how to do the finger exercise to preserve your cognitive cognitive function. So I have a lot of things going on. I'm like become an entrepreneur because America is the place to do this.
Yes, America is the place to do this. But you are one of the exceptional people who every thought, every idea you have, you push yourself to, and in your book, you say this a lot, overcome, overcome, overcome. And you also create.
Thank you.
It's just amazing. It's a beautiful energy of life. And I'm sure everyone who knows you just has so much respect for you and all you've done for the world already. But it sounds like you're not slowing down anytime soon. You're on Zoom with me, so I can see you. You look very young.
Thank you.
Yes, I have a feeling you're going to be doing things like this again and again. And I know you have other books as well. So we will be looking out for whatever happens next with Judy Gao. And I do really recommend for everyone to pick up her beautiful book. It's the true story of her life. It's called Dreams Across Continents, A Life of Challenges and Triumphs. It's not a long book. It's 75 pages. But you see the personal story of what it takes to overcome, and also to succeed. Judy Gao, thank you so much. People can find your book on Amazon or wherever fine books are sold.
Yes, you can find out from Amazon. There's a Kindle, there's a soft copy, there's hard copy. So it really is inspiration. I want to inspiration people to they are facing the difficulty, obstacle, and how to overcome of them, achieve your own goals and your own dreams.
Yes, indeed. And you are living proof of that. Judy Gao, and Gao is spelled G-A-O, Judy Gao. And again, she is a doctor, an author, an entrepreneur, a wife, and a mother, and so much more. Dreams Across Continents. Get the book today. Thank you so much. And God bless you on the next journey that you're about ready to embark on.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you as well.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Well, inspirational women and an inspirational guy. His name is Jim Cleafield, known as the guru of good news for our show, and goes out there, finds the most uplifting stories from out in the interweb of life. And we love that. Jimmy, what do you have for us today? I think you have two stories. And boy, the more the merrier, the more the better.
You got that right, LJ. From time to time of the show, I know I've talked about dogs. That's one of the topics I really love on this show. And sometimes we've talked about rescue dogs, right? Well, something very unique about this one rescue dog in Watertown, Wisconsin. And this one, named Jagger, did something really, really unusual. The rescue dog rescued somebody's life. And I'll tell you what happened. This happened in Watertown, Wisconsin. And its owner, Katie Higgins, who owns Jagger, took him to her parents' house recently. And there was an unusual discovery when they got to the backyard. They found a gentleman who was lying down flat on his back. They didn't know what was going on. It was a very shocking thing. And all of a sudden, Jagger starts barking. Just what is going on here? Well, their parents were there, and they didn't know what was going on with this man. They didn't know if he was alive. Well, fortunately, he was just unconscious somewhat, and he started to move his head a little bit, just enough that they were able to call 911 and get first responders on scene. And because of the dog's barking, they were able to resuscitate this gentleman. He was very nearly frozen. But he was conscious enough, they were able to revive him, and they were able to get him. And I'm happy to say that he is going to survive. But the fact that this dog just is a real, real genuine hero. And Katie's father said, believe it or not, your rescue dog just rescued a life. How often have we talked about that on this show? Rescue dogs have done a lot of things, but just this dog is an absolute hero. And thankfully, because of the alertness of Jagger, that this man's life, whoever he is, was able to be saved.
That's wonderful. I think the animals, like humans, are all born with the capacity, with a hero within. And when they are given the opportunity and the love and the good health to be able to do so, whenever the time arises, I think God often uses them to help save humans. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. And even
what
that,
about your next one? Is it about animals this time?
Well, not exactly. I know we had a chance to talk about this, but we've heard about these devastating wildfires that happened in Los Angeles back earlier in the year, back in January. And one couple has been living in a portion of Hollywood Hills for more than three decades, and they love their home. They're in the Runyon Canyon section. This is where the Sunset Fire had occurred, and they absolutely loved their home. Well, that day, back on January the 8th, they were looking through their security cameras, and they were just trying to monitor the situation. They were seeing flames were headed toward their direction. They were really worried, and they used their security camera to scare off a would-be looter when all of a sudden another stranger pops on the camera, and a gentleman in this name, Vince Percato, he's one of the co-owners of the his home, and he said, can we help you? I said, yeah, your house is on fire. Me and a firefighter, we just knocked it down. He had no idea this happened because, first of all, there were no fire engines on scene. They didn't hear any sirens. They were unable to access the home with a key, so they just simply used a garden hose, got the thing under control. Well, I'm happy to say, aside from some damage, the deck, some wood being charred, the house is intact. Unlike many homes that did not survive. All that devastation we've seen in the news every day, all of those fatalities, and they're just so grateful that this good Samaritan, whoever he may be, and they said, our problems are small compared to others, but we're just so grateful that our home of over 30 years was able to be preserved where so many did not. And they want to find this man and just say thank you, because not only did he save their home, he saved potentially an entire neighborhood. And that's something, as I said, every time we report on these natural disasters, whether it's a hurricane or a wildfire, whatever it may be, every once in a while, some good like this does come out. And here's another shining example. So whoever this gentleman is, he is, again, a hero for sure.
That's amazing. Oh, my goodness. And I'm sure as the months and years go by, we are going to hear more and more of those stories of people, yes, who were devastated by the fires. Tragically, a few, definitely more than a few, lost their lives. And yet there are some stories that have become, miracles to an extent. And the more time goes on, the more we will hear of them. But and that's true with any disaster, you do hear the horror stories, the things that are absolutely just beyond the pale, just so tragic. And yet you also hear stories of miracles, stories of rescue, stories of items found that were not destroyed that have so much meaning to the particular family or person. So, yes, I think we're going to be hearing more of those. But thank you for bringing this one to our attention and just people and neighbors helping neighbors like that. It truly is wonderful. And so grateful to all the people. So neighbors and neighborhoods, I even notice it in my own neighborhood, that people step up to help each other. And even with the help of social media, you've got these little groups online on whether it's Facebook or Nextdoor, and people post their needs or they have questions or whatever. And you see neighbors rushing in to help neighbors. And it's really an amazing thing. More good in the world than not, and more good people than not. That's what I say. Jimmy, thank you so much for always bringing us the beautiful stories that are going on out there, because we love to have people hear them and take them into their the new week and really try to be inspired. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bob, thank you too, my producer, who is just a wonder.
Thank you for mentioning me. Thank you.
He's the Wizard of Oz of radio.
Except he's not behind the curtain. I can see him.
Yes, that's right. He's a good Wizard of Oz. He's just a great wizard. He gets it all done kind of behind the scenes, behind the curtain.
We're all behind the curtain here. It's radio.
That's true. Radio is somewhat magical in
the
sense.
Mind. Yeah.
Thank you all. And thank you all for listening to The Way Home this week and to my wonderful guests. And may you all have a wonderful week that is safe, that's happy, healthy, and full of lots of miracles as well. I'm Laura Smith. See you next time from The Way Home.